Welcome back to the 2019 Virtual Genealogy Fair. If you are following along from home, this is session number 5. The lecture is for the experienced skill level and entitled Discovering and Researching Bureau of Indian Affairs School Records, and our speaker is Cody White. During this session, he will describe boarding and day school related records, both for individual students and schools in general, that are found in Record Group 75, Records of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Mr. White is an archivist with the National Archives at Denver and subject matter expert for Native American related records. I am now turning the broadcast over to Cody White.
Thank you, and well, hello there to everyone listening and watching live. I'd also like to welcome those in the future as we are recording this for posterity's sake. We are now live. It's high noon in the Mile High City, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening to me talk a bit today on BIA records. Next slide, please. Slide number 2. Well, let's go over a bit of what my plan is for today. I'd like to start with a brief history of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, what we'll call BIA for short, and its education efforts over the years. We'll look at the types of schools American Indian children attended, the types of records generated, restrictions on certain records, and those files that no longer exist. Then we'll look at what's in student case files throughout the years. We'll examine what can be found in administrative records, and then we'll wrap it all up with a research example before finishing with how to start your own research and what resources are available online. Next slide, please. Slide number 3. But what is the BIA? Well, with predecessor agencies dating back to nearly the start of the U.S., the Bureau of Indian Affairs was formally created in 1824 by the Department of War to handle relations with Native populations as the country pressed westward. A few decades later, the Bureau had evolved into its own agency under the purview of the newly created Department of Interior, where it remains today. The structure of the agency has varied over the years, with superintendencies covering entire territories, giving way to individual agencies, sub-agencies, substations, all created to administer to a particular tribal nation or multiple nations on one reservation. I'll mention agencies a lot today, and that's what we're talking about, a local office that works directly with one or many tribal nations. For example, the Red Lake Agency in Minnesota administers the Red Lake Reservation, home of the Red Lake Chippewa. So later, the superintendencies were brought back in a fashion as area offices to manage the various agencies under their geographic location. As one can imagine, relations between the agency and the tribal nations they administer have ebbed and flowed, more often ebbed, as we will see today. Next slide, please. Slide number 4. So as a primary connection between the government and the various tribal nations, the BIA features a pretty tortured history, and it is from one such dark chapter, that of the drive for assimilation, that BIA schools emerged from. But let's go back even further for a minute to show how the idea of education had been floating around a while. Excuse me. Missionaries were embarking on education efforts even before our country was founded. William and Mary in the early 1700s had one such program, and in 1819, the federal government first made funds available to support missionary schools aimed at the native population. 5 years later, there were 32 missionary schools educating nearly 1,000 native children in the East. The BIA, though, at this time, having moved on largely from the trading focus with the factories, were now engrossed with the removal in the East and yet to deeply push into the West, nor really fully concern itself with education efforts. Next slide, please. Slide number 5. Well, that brings us to the mid-1800s, the treaty era, where the federal government signed and ratified 377 treaties with various tribes. These, including the one seen here on this slide, are in our holdings and were recently the focus of a preservation and digitization program, thanks to an anonymous donor, and are all available online via our online catalog, which we'll touch on more in a bit. But I digress. It was from in many of these treaties where the BIA-run schools were established, as the text would clearly call out the creation of schools or education programs. So So within the spate of treaties in the 1850s came the first on-reservation boarding school at Fort Simcoe on the Yakima Reservation, which opened in 1860 and was in operation until 1922. Next slide, please. Slide number 6. Which brings us to the assimilation era. So by the late 1870s, this policy that had been kicked around for decades had taken firm root in the BIA and dramatically altered the lives of American Indians and what was left of their lands. So with tribes already forced on the reservations through the treaties, the new movement pushed further, contending that if American Indians adapted European-style clothing, the English language, institutional education, and the concept of land ownership and farming, they could better assimilate into the population at large. In conjunction, it was at this point we see the first non-reservation boarding schools, the most well-known, researched, written about, and referenced of which is the first, the Carlisle Institute in Pennsylvania, in operation from 1879 to 1918. The BIA was ruthless in stocking these schools with students, so much so that in 1885, Congress had to pass a law forbidding the taking of kids without parental permission, and then later specifically the tactics of withholding rations to force parents to give up children. So even seeming progressives like Estelle Riel from up in Wyoming, an early champion for women's rights, as superintendent of Indian schools from 1898 to 1910, espoused the common views that American Indians were racially inferior. So in these two school images, from schools thousands of miles apart, we see prime examples of the assimilation movement. Notice the uniforms, the Eurocentric art they're creating. There are many great books, memoirs, essays out there that well document this era and are worth checking out. Next slide, please. Slide number 7. The off-reservation schools began faltering by 1920, though, with attacks from both sides. One side argued that they weren't assimilating the children well enough. And as the other side simply pointed out, they were cruel. The few that remained were able to be pickier about students. Students had to apply, and the school shifted from the militaristic sort of industrial education to more liberal arts, though vocations were still taught and encouraged. The 1928 Merriam Report, which deeply, deeply criticized the BIA's education efforts and helped usher in the Indian New Deal in the 1930s, further forced schools to change. Numerous schools closed in the 1930s, while others, most notably the Santa Fe Indian School, embraced or started to embrace Native culture and fostering Native art. So here on this slide, we see a 1935 photo from the Stewart Indian School grounds right outside Carson City, Nevada, and the uniforms, they're long gone. Jumping ahead 40 years, the Cherokee Central Elementary School classroom looks no different from a regular public school. Now, a side note, this school today is in fact tribally run. In 1962, the BIA shuttered all the day schools on the Qualla boundary, the land that the Eastern Cherokee bought in the early 1800s, and opened the Central Elementary School. And in 1990, it was turned over to the tribal council to run. So speaking of elementary schools, the public ones, another education trend in the 20th century was the increase in Native children attending public schools, which saved the agency money and saved it from criticism, yet were no less assimilating. This is documented in the blistering 1969 Senate report on American Indian education, which, as a time frame, is about where this presentation will end, as our BIA collection here at the National Archives starts to taper off at that point, with more recent records still with the agency. Next slide, please. Slide number 8. So let's dive into the type of schools and start with the most well-known, the non-reservation boarding school. These were built apart from reservations, often at former Army fort sites, and operated independently of BIA agencies, reporting directly to the BIA commissioner, and at times, as seen in both Michigan and New Mexico, superintendents of these schools would also be put in charge of nearby BIA agencies. For these reasons, these schools alone will often have their own dedicated record series in our collection, and so are the most researched and referenced. The student body was also often diverse, with students from a variety of tribal nations. Speaking of Michigan, here is a school seen on this slide, in operation from 1893 to 1934. Next slide, please. Slide number 9. reservation boarding schools were those built on the reservation. Now, these were the earliest of the boarding schools, and it was actually from them, the idea that educators needed to remove the students even further from their people to fully assimilate them, that the non-reservation boarding schools emerged from. Yet these schools continued alongside. They were run under the respective BIA agency. So while there can be dedicated series to be found, often the records will be mixed in with general records, as we will see. In this slide, we see a student body photograph from the Cherokee Boarding School, in operation from 1890 to 1954.